So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
Brown still looking at a four-headed quarterback monster and to talk about everything, right? To help assist the show, we've got Mac Robinson on the board. Yes. We've got the Assassin's Apprentice, Anthony Allant behind the glassy knoll there. We got Katie Pollack on the 2020s. And with me, as always, my good buddy Jonathan Peterlin. What's up, bud?
Hey, man, how are you? Happy anniversary, because apparently that's a thing that people... I didn't know that was a thing that people tell people, but then I've heard you... I've been with you all day, and I've heard like 12 people say it, so yeah. Happy anniversary.
I mean, I made a big Facebook post about it, so anytime...
I did see that. That was nice.
Anytime you have like a big public pronouncement or something, that's one thing that's nice, especially in like a communications business, is people take notice of that. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, I didn't know, because it's like, I mean, Vanessa's not here. Do you like go home and like give her the tally of people that said happy anniversary? How does that work?
I mean, she sees the Facebook likes.
Okay, all that matters.
This one's for me. No, the thing I like, so happy birthday always feels weird, because it's like, I think you should congratulate my mom, because she did the heavy lifting on me being born and not me.
See, now you're venturing into my happy Mother's Day theories. So yeah, let's do this.
But on an anniversary, like, being married for now 13 years, I've been with Vanessa for 18 years this September, that's a real accomplishment.
Yeah, congrats. You are not a bad statistic.
Yet. Now, there is time.
What is the rate of divorces after 13 years? I do feel like the number does spike when the kids get out of college or out of high school.
Really? Because I think that's what she's looking for.
I mean, I think there's one of two ways this goes, right? You either get divorced within like 5 years and it just didn't work out and it stinks, or you wait until the kids end up graduating high school and then the kids are out and then you're supposed to be empty nesters, and then one person gets blindsided by the idea that the other person hated them for going on a decade longer.
Which, by the way, is the worst way to go about a divorce. Like, tell the person you hate them along the way. Don't lure them into something.
How asleep do you have to be, though, if you don't pick up on the fact that they just hate your guts for a decade, but they're clearly doing it for the children?
I mean, isn't that the point of being married? You get to be a little asleep. Like, you just don't have to have your guard up to the same degree.
You probably should be asleep. In a happy marriage, you probably should be asleep a little bit.
No, like 80% of Vanessa and my disagreements will be gone when we are empty nesters.
You'll find new ones.
Oh, no, we will.
You'll find new ones.
Like, listen, the best part about marriage is you survive the storm and you're like, oh, thank God that's done, as if another one won't come around the corner. It's marriage. There are good times or bad times. But so much of the things now, living in a home with either teen or preteen girls, everything is just so heightened in my house.
I could see that, yeah.
So when like I'll walk in, I'll be like, how's your day, baby? Fine. I'm like, whoa. Like you just, and it's, by the way,
you got three kids though and a wife. I would just keep going to the next one until I got a good answer.
I
would do the revolving. I would just, okay, so you said fine with a tone, so I'm just going to skip you for now. How are you doing today? And just keep going until one gave me an answer that was like, let's have a convo.
Although Livy and I are kind of our buoys. Like, when Mama Bear and the twins are really good, Livy and I will just step aside and do like a little dumb bit to amuse ourselves so we don't get into the fray.
Okay.
But no, that by the way, if Mama Bear says it's not fine, or she says it's fine in that way, you can bet your sweet Bippy I'm not going to get a different answer farther on down the line.
it's trickled all the way down.
When it's gotten bad enough that it upsets Mama Bear, believe me, everybody in that house, because Vanessa's so low-key and she's so just naturally a sweet person that when you make her mad, all of a sudden, it's a real problem, because she just doesn't get mad that often.
And just
So, yeah. Where were we going with this one? The point is,
you're not a statistic yet, and congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I take more pride in this than just simply living to 39. I take more pride in being married for 13 years in a committed relationship, basically married since day three of our relationship, 18 years. I take more pride in that than simply surviving.
Well, I mean, you're 39, not like 69 yet. I mean, that's nice. you got a long way to go.
Well, yes, but I think my point is, like, if you can survive even a decade of marriage, my hat's off to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That sounded like a bad thing. I mean that in a good way. Like you've developed some skills with each other.
I mean, again, 50% of the country doesn't make it. So it's tough out there.
So, well, it's tough out there, not just for marriages, but for Kobe Altman. Do you like what you heard today from Kobe?
I'm a little torn on this because I feel like he could have given the same exact everything if they had just gotten knocked out by the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no part of this felt different. No part of this was, I felt responsive to the idea that you didn't win a home game against the Pacers and were knocked out in five games, the same five games that you were knocked out against the Celtics last year. Like, it just didn't scream to me. I don't know what else he could have said, if I'm being honest, but it didn't scream to me a sense of we failed, we let everyone down, and this was an abject disaster. It felt more like, yeah, we went to where we can go, we need to get better, and then we're just going to put it all on next year.
Yeah, I feel like there were some things that I heard that I did like in terms of, I know people scoffed at this, but little things like internal growth, specifically for Evan Mobley, that's not wishes, hopes, and dreams. When you drafted Evan Mobley, knowing he was going to be your highest ceiling player, we're all on Evan Mobley time here.
Right, and what he kind of delivered that and presented it to you guys and us, I felt like, as if like, well, of course it was, we did this a little too early.
Yeah.
Like, don't you guys all recognize how early we are here? It's all about Evan. It's all about Mobley and what he can do. And we're early. If the party started at 8, it's 6:15 right now, guys.
Now, so I like that. There were a couple other little things. Like, I think he made a good point about you didn't really get an off-season program with Kenny Atkinson last year because of when he was hired and the fact he was an assistant for the French team.
Which was bananas that he said. He's like, that's part of the reason why we hired him is for the off-season programs.
But
like, that's the thing we love the most about him. It's like, I'd love him coaching the actual games, but okay, I get your point.
And also, how would you know?
Right, that's the other part of this. I mean, no clue how he would know.
So There were plenty of things within what he said that I actually do think, in comparisons that he made, like, I don't think it was just one-sided, Kobe had a bad press conference. But I do think he went to the nth degree to make his point in a way that I don't think served this Cavs team at all. I actually want to play this, because he was talking about the importance of how that series went. And he used Game 2 as a backdrop to basically analyze the whole series. Here's
I think
Kobe
we really do need to give the Pacers a little bit more credit. And when you get to that last eight teams, everyone's really good. And it's on the margins where you get that win, that foul line blackout, right? Game 2 is going to haunt us. You know, we're 1-1 going into Indiana. It's a different series. We have to learn that. We have to learn that. We can't have an 8-second violation. Right, you have to make sure we inbound the ball. We have to shove and push and get open, right? Those kind of things, right? We have to be able to do to win that game, to win that series. It's interesting. Like, we actually were scoring the ball pretty well. We were playing in the 110s and 120s a lot of those games. They just scored more. They outscored us. So we got to figure out a few things. I think, to me, like, there's going to be a mental toughness hurdle that we have to get over. And the Pacers did a remarkable job.
All right, so I'm so glad you keyed in on the thing, because I actually said analysis when he said, yeah, we scored the ball pretty well. We were scored in the 110s there.
They just scored more.
Yeah, they just scored more. And it was like, is Game 2 really important? Harkening back to what Andy Baskin said before Game 2.
Well, that was like when he went down the whole diatribe about, like, well, we have all these numbers that say that we out-rebounded them, we had more assists than them, we did this right and this right. They had more points than us. And it was like, well, that's the most important part, Kobe.
I guess that's as simple as that. So, again, even within that 110 clip there, mental toughness. Yep. It's a little, this isn't Madden, it's not 2K, it's a little tough to put your finger on mental acuity, but yeah, mental toughness, not physical toughness, is why you lost that series. Talking about the margins, yes, when you lose this late in the playoffs, you have to get marginally better from here. Getting better by leaps and bounds really only happens by player development. Agreed. But also, the thing of everyone's really good in the playoffs, that's another analysis.
Yeah, he weren't very good.
But chalking this up to Game 2, I know what he was doing what he was trying to do was paint a picture of that series wasn't lopsided. It was. And I think that's where I got frustrated listening to it. Well, if we just box out. Now, you're talking about a specific game. Because games 1, game 4, and game 5 were decided by a total of 48 points. So you had one game where you blew them out, and then you had one last-second loss, and the other three games were effectively blowouts.
Well, and that one, game 4, by the way, skewed a lot of the numbers. Like, if you look at three-point percentage at the end of the series, Cavs on the season, 38%, and the series, 36%.
Yes.
And so when you point to things like that, it's like, well, we didn't shoot the ball that bad. It's like, no, you shot the ball great for one game, and it skewed everything else because it's a small sample size, and it's a five-game set.
I'm so glad you said that because he also did the same thing with, if you look at the playoffs in general, it's like, we know what happened in the Miami series, Jack.
Yeah.
You were lights out. That is carrying a lot of weight, but it did. It felt like he was trying to use game 2 and how close that game was to tell a tale. And it's like, Kobe, you got gentlemanly swept. And in 60% of the games, you got blown out. And I understand that you can't come out and say, Jared's a real problem, we're going to trade him.
Right.
And, hey, he said Darius has got to put on weight. You can't come out and say, I'm considering trading Darius Garland. That's not what anybody wanted. What somebody wanted was to be like, we made a lot of regular season progress. We thought we had gotten over the hump after that Miami series, and we got punched in the you-know-whats. And there just wasn't enough. It felt more like a guy that was trying to convince Dan Gilbert, as much as you and me, that we're really not that far away, than a guy that actually, it felt a lot more like PR damage control, which is not what I needed. Almost a full week after the series ended.
Oh, you see, I got the sense that he believes it, but he was the only guy last year that at the end of the season believed that it was a coaching change and that's all they needed too. Mm-hmm. So I think he loves this team. I think he loves because he constructed it. I think he loves how it was built. I think he loves the situation that they're in. I don't think he looks at it the same way as we all look at it. Like, you need to do something. This is not going the way you think it is.
So I think, and I'm so glad you said that because it plays into where I was with this press conference. That Pacers series is the first time I considered that this Cavs team as constructed has no chance of winning an NBA championship. That press conference earlier today, that sounded like a guy trying to convince his boss that, hey, we got to keep this thing together and convince everybody around him we got to keep this thing together. And it's the first time I've doubted that Kobe can be the guy to make the necessary steps. Agreed. That a lot of the success going forward can be navigated in a positive way by increasing your margins. Health is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So is a couple guys maybe getting bigger or maybe running the offense more through Evan, which is something we can talk about. There are ways to get better as currently constructed. The other thing, though, about winning a championship, and he compared them to Boston, and he's like, look at the Boston roster in 2017. And then compare it to the Boston roster in 2024.
I kept saying it took 7 years for them to win a title.
The two consistents are Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
They brought in, I mean, they traded the heart of the team, Marcus Smart, at one point. They traded this guy. They traded Al Horford. They brought Al Horford back. Like, this is like to build a championship team, you have to prune it like a tree. And sometimes that means cutting off promising branches if it helps the rest of the tree get better. And so the idea that the only way to get better from here is just improve on the margins, that is getting in your own way and basically saying, because I can't do it myself. I can't prune this tree myself because I'm too attached to the pieces there. I know he can make trades. I know he can make the right moves. It's now, does he have the stomach for it? And I didn't hear a guy today that has the stomach to make the necessary, difficult decisions to get better from here.
No, I mean, based off of what he said today, and again, it's not gospel, but like based off of what he said today, Nick, I mean, they're not trading any piece of the core for. They're going to run it back, and Kobe's, in his mind, he thinks development is going to be the way that this Cavs team ultimately gets over the hump.
Which is wild, because there's like one guy below 25 on this roster.
Right. It's a much older roster. Even when he came out, he's like, they averaged 26.8 years. It's like, that's not young.
Yeah.
Why are you saying that? Like, that's a young thing.
And I think he's playing on the fact that I think a lot of people trick themselves. And, well, LeBron's in the league. Kevin Durant's in the league. Steph is in the league.
It's just Mobley, though. That's all he's doing.
Yeah. Or Okoro, who you had, is it 5 years now to develop an offensive game? You don't have one.
No, I think he... So remember, Giannis, after year four, he took him to what, year six? And then he won back-to-back league MVPs. I think he thinks that massive MVP caliber jump is right around the corner. The problem is you don't have forever to figure this out with these guys.
Well, in specific, you if you just were waiting on Evan, you have a long time, right? Evan being 23, you have a long time.
Yeah, if it was just Evan, but it's not.
Then you go to the opposite side of your roster, and there's Donovan, who's going to be 29, who is an undersized combo guard. I mean, I'm not trying to be too on the nose here. Look at Kemba Walker, age 28. Look at Kemba 2 years later.
Well, nobody we respect says that they can do anything more than keep this core four together for more than 2 or 3 years potentially anyway.
So I just, I know he was trying to thread a needle. So I can't come out here and just hammer the guy. And he doesn't know what he's doing. I think he knows what he's doing. I do. I don't think Kobe's a bad GM. This isn't this. But I heard a guy who might be a little too committed to his process or to the guys that he's already drafted instead of making...
So you have a podcast and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
Thoughtful and pinpoint decisions to make the roster better around Donovan and around Evan.
I like that you bring up the word process, though, because this definitely doesn't sound like someone, you know, the old analytical line is process over outcome. That's what they always preach. This definitely felt like someone that was preaching process instead of outcome. And he was making sure that the outcome part of this, which is losing in five games of the Pacers, doesn't disrupt any part of his process that he has.
And I have, listen, if the moves this summer bear different fruit, meaning he said one thing today and the moves that tell a different tale this summer, good. Then today was ground fire. I can accept that. If you get through and your big to-do is you re-sign Ty Jerome and draft somebody with a 49th and 59th picks, I'm sorry, like, can you be better next year? Yes.
No, we're in an odd spot, yeah.
But you're getting really close to wasting Donovan's prime and maybe starting to cut into even like Darius and Jared's prime.
What's funny is now you have me just rooting that for the half hour that he spent up there talking today, that he was just flat out lying to everybody.
You can't put it past him, which is why we can't.
It's what I have to root for right now.
216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We've got a loaded show for you. Cynthia Freeland on the Browns over-unders, what she thinks of the quarterback situation of the NFL Network at 320. Spencer Davies, he was at the press conference today for Kobe Altman. He covers the Cavs for SI amongst his 97 jobs. Ralph Vacchiano, Fox Sports NFL writer at 440. He wrote a big piece on where the Browns over-under sets for him and whether you take the over or the under. He's coming up at 440. But loaded show today. I want to hear from you guys. Did you like Kobe Altman's message? I heard a lot of things that I do not disagree with. I heard a lot of things that I actually might agree with. The problem is he took a lot of liberties and expounded on things in a way where I think he just pushed the truth a little too far. And that patience as the answer, is that nonsense or is it for real? That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.